Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is December the 13th, 2012, and we're talking today about healing emotional and physical injuries and how to handle, athletes who've had injuries both emotionally and physically, as well as people in the people around them, the family and friends and other members, and lots of things have happened, you know, in the news and sports, and so I wanted to, share some of that with you and get your opinions about what you think about what can be done and what we as performing as coaches can do to help with, help prevent, athlete breakdowns with emotions and also to just help athletes deal with everything that's going on in their lives. So, it's great to have all of you here. And, it's always good to have people share good news or success when something's good happening too. So, Pam, did you say you just started your you're doing Vermont workshops?
Yeah, my Vermont workshops I did last weekend.
It's for soccer, is that right?
Yeah, soccer. It's a high-level developmental soccer club, ages 10 to 18, mostly boys. The age group teams on this high-level club, and it's just going to be mental skills training once a month for the next 6 months. So I met an hour and a half to 2 hours, which we combined the teams for the first session. And it'll just be teaching mental skills. It was so much fun, and they were so receptive to it, and the coach was too. So it was great. I'm very, very excited. I'm now the exclusive sports psychologist for their team. So.
Wow. Yeah. That's
awesome. They don't want me to work with any of the other, developmental programs in the Vermont area, which is fine. And this is a really high level by the director of the program, and so he wants to keep me to himself, which is fine. I said, so in the state of Vermont, that's good. California, still, I'm going to branch out. And said, I don't care what you do in California. So.
Yeah, you're getting paid very well for it, right?
So it's great, yeah.
That's great. When you're getting paid well, you can be the exclusive person.
Yeah, exactly. I said, so I'm, that's what I said, you're kiddingly, but then we'll talk about it. So there's a fee for exclusivity.
That's right. So, that's great. Congratulations. And you get to do eight different workshops there?
Yes. So, and then I had a parent meeting, and the parents were the most interesting side of it, because then they had to tell me about, how intense the coach was and how sometimes not nice they were he was to the players, et cetera. And so that was it. I mean, that's where I had to use the psychology part to keep them at bay, and they wanted to know if I was going to be training them as well. And I said, well, if you want to hire me to train you, I can, but that's not part of the program. The program is for the kids. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So,
it was great, yeah.
Yeah, congratulations on that. Good work. Yeah, does anyone else have something that they want to share with, regard to success stories or good things that are happening?
Hi, Dr. Joanne, it's Amy.
Hi, Amy.
I had a very good workshop with the professional dancers at the ballet. It was 2 weeks ago today, and I had 15 dancers, and it was really funny because we were in one of their studios, and I said, well, where do you guys want to sit? And they were just sitting on the floor in splits. And it was so funny seeing them like that, because they had come from their rehearsal, and then they had an hour for lunch break, and then they were going back to another rehearsal, and I watched them after. But I did a profile with them where I made up different questions, and I did a meditation at the end, and it was very interactive, and then I mean, I thought it went really well. I could have spent another hour with them. And then a couple days later, I asked the artistic director if he had any feedback. And he said, yes, it went very well. And after he's doing the Nutcracker now, after we get the Nutcracker up and working, I'd like to meet with you to talk about doing more with the professionals and then working with their school. So I was really happy about that.
Awesome.
Yeah, fantastic. Congratulations, Amy.
Yeah, so that's, I really would love to continue this. It sounds like it's going to, so that was
great.
My story.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, it's great to see this these kind of principles in action. Yeah, and I know, Sue, you're, Hasker, you're working with a client you mentioned. Do you, I don't know if you have a moment you can mention that,
sure.
If you can talk.
Yeah, I can, and in the beginning I can talk, then I'll have to kind of mute, but yeah, I'm working with a woman who's, she's been a serious runner her whole life. She's 38 now, and she had a knee injury that kept her from running, and so she was trying to get back into running. She realized that she was favoring that knee, and she ended up with a compensatory injury in the other knee. So she took up swimming, and then she hurt her shoulder, so now she really can't do much of anything, but the hardest part for her is trying to realize that she may not be able to get back into the body that she used to have, and grieving the loss of a dream of being a runner, losing the friendships that she had in the running community, and then now the fear that she's going to gain weight. And it's all a lot of emotional stuff around a physical injury, so we're working on it through a grief recovery program.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, if you have any background noise, if you can just press star 6 on your phone, that'll handle that. That would be great. So, yeah, Sue, congratulations. Yeah, that's a tough one to deal with for sure.
Yeah, you're doing great work.
Yeah, it's a lot of changes going on. And yeah, swimming is a great alternative to running often, but then yeah, if you can't overdo it, or else you can mess up something else in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah,
every time she feels a little twinge of pain, she thinks, oh, I'll never be able to run again, or I'll never be able to swim again. And it's this vicious kind of negative loop that starts, and she's trying to stop that.
Yeah, and so the negative thinking, yeah, changing that into positive thinking, and always thinking about what can I do as opposed to what can't I do, what am I missing, is always good. Even if she could just walk a little bit or do exercises, you know, like floor exercises. I know when I had my bicycle injury and bicycle accident a year ago and couldn't, walk or run or swim or bike or do any of the things I usually do. Yeah, it was frustrating. But I thought, well, what can I do? Well, at least I could do a few little floor exercises, you know, for if I just started with 5 minutes, you know, little 5-minute sessions a little bit throughout the day. And just tiny little things that I could do, and it was very rewarding to just think about, you know, that kind of thing, what I could do, and then you know, try to chart the progress, and it's always kind of trying to be creative with what you can do, and like you say, accept where your body's at, accept what you can't do, and. I think we can always try to move in some way. There's simple things that we can do to move, even just dancing, you know, playing some music and dance, you know, dancing in place or something. Yeah. So, so that's great. So congratulations for working on that. Yeah, having your client and good luck with that. You can keep us informed here. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and then Brian, are you there too? Are you working with a client too? Or with any other athletes? I'm not sure if he's on mute. I think TJ just, I don't hear Brian, but TJ, I think she just joined us too. I think you just got back from Peru, did you?
Yeah, I did. I just got back yesterday.
Oh, you're still in jet lag. Yeah, well, great to have you back. Did you have a good trip there?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, we did 150 kilometers in a week and raised a whole bunch of money for Health Bridges International, and it was really wonderful. Yeah, it was a great marathon.
Yeah, fantastic. So, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And, yeah, I know you're all about
Yeah, thanks.
With as a massage therapist and performing edge coach, you're all about, you know, working with healing injury, physical injuries and mental injuries now. So that's,
yeah, there was a lot of mental stuff to talk about when you're running, you know, 350-kilometer runs. So it was interesting.
Yeah, that's a
yeah.
lot. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Your mind saying, I don't want to do this anymore. Let's just sit down and have a beer, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to be writing up some stuff on it and posting that at some point soon. So.
Okay, well,
I'll
great.
I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah,
good,
thanks.
Good to have you back and all. And I'm so
thanks.
Glad you did that.
Good to
wonderful.
Be back.
Yeah, wonderful fundraiser that you just that you did, too. Yeah, and to be in Peru. Yes, you have to share some pictures. So,
yeah.
So I wanted to talk about our topic today about how to, you know, there's so much going on in the sports area with, you know, trauma and injury. And the reason I was thinking about this area, it came up because it's, you know, been in the national news that I got, it was last Saturday, a week ago from Saturday, December 1st, I got a call from a national news station in Canada, you know, in Ottawa, Canada. They have one major national news station. I know we've got Tanya and we've got people, Floyd Hill is up in Performing Edge Coach. We've got another guy, Steve, that's in Canada. It's in our group here. And so the national station up there is called CTV News, Canada TV National News, and so they called and said, do you want to comment on this story that just happened? And I said, what story? And it had just literally happened minutes after that, and that, you know, of course, all the news stations find out about it right away, and that this, you know, NFL linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, Jovan Belcher, you know, shot Eric and killed his girlfriend in front of his own mother on Saturday morning on December 1st, and then he drove to the Chiefs, to his practice facility, and thanked his coaches for all that they had done for him, you know, calmly thanked them, shook their hand, and then walked behind a car and killed himself. And then he left behind a 3-month-old baby girl. So the whole thing is just a heart-wrenching and a heartbreaking story. And so it made me think about just all the, you know, the trauma that and tough situations that athletes are going through, and so many different situations that we can deal with, and how we can be really helpful as coaches in so many situations like this. But there's so much else. It's not like what we see out on the playing field or out on the running course is only at the tip of the iceberg of what's really going on in their minds, their bodies, and their spirits. So a lot of times people are really troubled inside, and we have no idea what's going on. So that's why I think our fields of sports psychology and mental training is so important, and how we can really make a difference in people's lives. A lot of times we could prevent these kinds of tragedies from happening, or if they do happen, we can do something about them to help or, you know, maybe help mitigate the problem or help the athlete through a struggling situation, like Sue, you're doing with this, you know, athlete who has a knee injury and then a shoulder injury. And there's a lot going on emotionally when somebody gets injured, too. And so what I wanted to bring out, the unique, thing, one of the learning points with this Jovan Belcher case that I think can be relevant to other athletes too, what makes it especially troubling is that, they asked me to comment on national TV about it, and if you saw that little clip I gave you, it was not real long, or you couldn't see me real well because I was doing it, talking on Skype, but I said that, a lot of these athletes don't have the mental skills, the physical skills to handle all that's happening in their lives. A lot of athletes get to, or they can't handle the fame or the money or the fortune or whatever is going on to be able to you know, manage everything that's going on. But what makes this story especially troubling with Belcher is that he didn't fit the typical profile for domestic violence, not by a long shot. Actually, before, you know, being drafted into the NFL, Jovan Belcher, he graduated with a degree in child development and family relations from the University of Maine. You know, what a strange combination. Here he is, you know, he killed his girlfriend, shot her 9 times, and then shot, killed himself. And this is a guy that was actually interested in studying, you know, child development and family relations from the University of Maine. And then while he was at Maine, Belcher joined an anti-violence group called Male Athletes Against Violence. And as a member of that group, he had to sign a pledge that included saying, you know, I pledge to educate myself on issues surrounding violence while developing personal beliefs against the use of violence, and to be a positive role model for my community, and to look honestly at my actions in regard to violence and make changes if necessary. So this is a guy that was really serious about, you know, developing himself and being a good person in the community. And so, you know, and even other coach, like Belcher's University of Maine football coach said, you know, it would be hard to find somebody that had more of a positive impact on his teammates and his football family than Belcher. That he was one of the true, you know, great stories in our program's history. And then his high school coach also said the same thing, that he's a great athlete and unbelievable role model. So the question is, what went wrong, and what goes wrong in athletes a lot of times? What could cause somebody like Belcher to, you know, resort to these shocking acts of violence and turn, you know, this inspiring role model into a killer? And one possible explanation is, I mean, there's lots of things that are going on, probably, you know, socially, emotionally. But one thing that may be going on was traumatic brain injury, which is called TBI, and it's a condition that frequently affects professional football players. It also affects, you know, hockey players that get involved in accidents. You know, could be, you know, even like Jeff LaVout. I know, I think you're on the call too here, but he said he couldn't participate because he's in a meeting right now at work. But I know, Jeff, yeah, you sent an email with lots of great comments here that I want to talk about, too. Yeah, Jeff was saying with motocross, there can be, you know, head injuries and a lot of sport. And just, you know, even people with triathlons and bicycle, you know, cycling, you can get, you know, traumatic brain injury from just falling from an accident. And what people don't realize is that traumatic brain injury, it can cause emotional and social and behavioral problems, and it can also cause changes in personality, including like the inability to control anger, disinhibition, and impulsiveness, which is, you know, of course, what we saw in Belcher with these, you know, the murder and the suicide. And and additionally, the traumatic brain injury, it appears to make the survivors, it predisposes them to psychiatric disorders like substance abuse and clinical depression. I mean, real clinical depression. I've seen this many times in working in hospital situations myself as a clinical psychologist and sports psychologist. And, you know, we saw that with his friends were saying that Belcher was drinking every day and taking painkillers for his to handle the head pain and body pain of being out there every day. And so there's one study in the Psychiatric Times that said that suicidal ideation is not uncommon with people with traumatic brain injury, and the rates of suicide after having a traumatic brain injury are increased 2 to 3-fold. So, you know, all this fits with what his friends were saying, you know, claiming that he was, you know, yeah, abusing substances every day and taking, you know, prescription painkillers to just deal with those effects of debilitating football-related head injuries. So that's something to be aware of in this case, and then you know, it's something to ask your athletes a lot of times if they're having social or psychiatric problems. So the combination of traumatic brain injury and alcohol and handguns, you know, it just makes for a deadly combination. That was behind this Belcher's murder and suicide. But it's also it's also interesting that it's this combination of traumatic brain injury and alcohol and handguns, it's also been linked to really high trends of suicides and violent crime among soldiers returning from combat. So the military have the same kinds of issues. Sort of good people, good kids who crack and become violent under pressure. But also there's the, I think, it's critical to understand that personality plays a role in this too, that, sometimes personalities can actually change with something like traumatic brain injury. And it's critical to understand that TBI, it impairs the brain's ability to make the right kinds of moral choices, to decide what's right and wrong. All of a sudden there's not, the brain isn't able to cope and make the right decisions. So, we need to ask ourselves, did this athlete, did these football injuries turn Belcher into a killer? What was actually going on from football, may actually have changed his personality and changed his the way his brain was functioning. And if so, the NFL, we're seeing these discussions on TV right now. Does the NFL need to change to avoid these kind of tragedies in the future, and other sports as well? I mean, it's just getting much more, they're hitting harder out there, and the salaries are so much higher, and the stakes are so much higher that it just creates a lot more pressure on the athletes to perform and to win, that pressure to win all the time. And so, just ironically, just a few days before this tragedy happened, the Kansas City Chiefs players and also Army leaders were saying that a change in culture needs to take place, around these risks of concussions. So their point, I think, then all of this stuff happened. So I think it's, you can't just write this off as one bad incident. It's really a whole culture that's going on, and we need to, look at the larger conversation that we need to have when it comes to sports and the kinds of injuries that happen, and ask ourselves, and the traumatic brain injury, and ask ourselves some tough questions about, what we're willing to sacrifice, people watching the game, and then what athletes are willing to sacrifice, for having that, to be able to participate in this area. So some of the things that I think, what my thoughts are on this, behind the scenes, what goes on, and what we need to realize as performing edge coaches is that, the pressure on these pro athletes is tremendous. And I think it goes all the way down to just, high school athletes and college athletes and recreational athletes too, that there's a lot more pressure than we realize in the background. There's, pressure from coaches, pressure from parents, pressure from the from their sponsors, if their sponsors, parents oftentimes have huge expectations for their kids, and there's pressure from the media and pressure from family to, balance their lives from with all that they need to do with performing in the sport, as well as then coming home. And like in the case of Belcher, he just had this 3-month-old baby. My gosh, that's a huge change in his life, and being able to balance that with being able to play, be up for playing every day. And there's with in professional sports, you've got these huge contracts that keep getting higher, paying these athletes millions of dollars and high expectations and expectations to live a certain lifestyle. And you have to always be in shape to have that competitive advantage. And sometimes I think the standard is too high, that we're just, sometimes you can't, these people, we need to realize that athletes are only human, and that we need to recognize that, you know, feeling the pressure, I think the athletes feel the pressure that we put on them, or that they often they put on themselves too. And there's the commercial world, you know, paying these athletes millions of dollars, not only in the game, but sponsorship as well. And athletes feel like they're really owned by a team. You're owned by a team, a company, and you have to perform. And that's where I think our coaching can help. Our performing edge coaching here can really help in these kind of situations. You know, when you're working with an athlete, no matter what level it is, the top level or somebody who's just developing, you know, to be able to say to that athlete, you know, let's talk about your successes. Not just wins and losses can't just be counted on the scoreboard, but they're counted in terms of, you know, your own personal progress or the effort that you put in with a game. Like, especially in these team sports, you know, one athlete could be having the best game of his life and doing so well himself personally in the game, but the team still may lose, you know, lose the game. And oftentimes the athlete doesn't get any credit or recognition for what he did or she did as a, you know, within the game. So I think that's where it's important for us as coaches to give, after a game like that, to put their, help the athlete put performance in perspective into a bigger picture. And that's where some coaches can't do that for the athlete because they're out there just looking at the total win, the total picture. But sometimes they miss the efforts of the individual athletes. And that's the advantage that athletes have with us working with them as performance coaches, is that when things don't go well, you know, you can help them provide that balance and say to the athlete, you know, here's how you can improve, and here's how you can keep your own self-esteem regardless of what's going on with the team or with the coach or with the personal relationships or politics that are maybe going on within the team. And, you know, it just asking the athlete, what did you do individually that you feel good about? And I think, you know, in some sports, like football and like hockey and basketball and baseball, and even, you know, endurance sports, I think a lot of times everything has to be up, you know, amped up, high energy, you know, during the event. But when the game or the race is over, then it's just the opposite. Then you have to flip the switch and, you know, learn how to relax and recover and have those softer emotions that aren't acknowledged. Like in chapter one of the Your Performing Edge book, I talk about not only you need to have the tougher emotions like aggression and competitiveness and mental toughness and all, but also the softer emotions like you know, like understanding and feeling, you know, and hurt and sadness and of putting things in perspective, reflection, all those things need to be worked on and acknowledged as well. And like, you know, talking with one of our coaches, Steve, up in Canada, who works with hockey players, he was saying that with hockey players, you've got to turn it on and then turn it off, you know, turn on the energy, and then you're turning it off constantly back and forth, and it's not so easy. The human brain doesn't do that so easily. And often athletes end up turning to drugs that gets them too far up to get really amped up, and then after the game or after the sports, and they need alcohol or something to come down. They need something to bring them down, and they can't, sometimes don't have the skills or don't think they have the skills to do it themselves, so they use alcohol to come down, which, you know, can lead to addiction. I think, you know, you're asking too much of your body when you're constantly doing that up and down. And when that's, I think, you know, pro sports need to invest in that part of the emotional player. You know, what you're seeing on the game day or on the race day is only the tip of the iceberg out there. You know, we need to take care of the rest of the mind and invest in the emotional player and the psychological development of each athlete. And when we have a crisis like this, with somebody like Belcher, you know, killing a girlfriend and then killing himself, you know, I think what it gives us an opportunity to be open to hearing what's going on inside athletes and what needs to change. For instance, in hockey now, you know, they had all these problems, but they have had several suicides in the sport of hockey with these guys that were called enforcers, guys that are just specifically out there just to beat up other guys and to, you know, to start these fights in between the games and in between plays. And now they've instituted new rules and penalties where any headshots would result in a penalty and an automatic review. And so they've got one person out there just to monitor the headshots in each game. That's his specific job, which is, I think, a really good thing for the sport. And if there are any headshots in there, attempts at hitting someone's head, then that they're reviewed, and the player could be penalized, suspended, and penalties could escalate with each headshot. So I think that's a good thing for hockey, and that needs to happen in other sports too. So whenever there's fame and fortune involved, I think you no longer play the sport sometimes because you love it, but it becomes a job sometimes. And I think when we're working with athletes, the same thing can happen actually with high school athletes too, that just want to try to get into college, want to try to get into the college of their choice and use sports to get a scholarship. That's a really good goal to have, but then sometimes it makes the sport more of a job than a game. And it's something that we have to, you know, try to keep things, help athletes to keep things in perspective and have a, you know, put things, allow the athlete to still make it fun. The sacrifices are quite large, I think, a lot of times that we're asking people to do. And so families also, we need to ask athletes in terms of balance. We need to ask athletes, well, what about your family? How important is your family to you, or your support system? Does the sport dominate and take over everything in your life? And I think having the ability to understand values and that a lot of times professional sports doesn't leave a lot of room for that, for, you know, putting your family and other things into perspective. You know, situations where, you know, a top pro athlete says, well, sorry, I can't make practice because my wife's giving birth to our first child. And they say, well, sorry, we're paying you millions of dollars. You have to be here for practice. You know, that kind of situation is not conducive to a good balanced family life at all. And, you're our star quarterback. You got to be here. And I think, you know, we have to, those are situations that, you know, that sports needs to deal with. But also, we as coaches can help with that, I think, and focus on the emotional person, the psychological impact. And if you're working with coaches on teams, then that's something to work on with them. That coaches need to have an understanding about, you know, what that means to have appreciation, to allow players to be with their family, with their loved ones, and then we would have a happier player. We'd have happier athletes that can be, you know, longer success, be out there for a longer period of time because they've got other things to fall back on. And so I think, you know, what we can do as performing edge coaches is focus on the human part. The coach himself and the general manager of these teams, they're focused on the bottom line, usually playing and winning and making money. But we as performing edge coaches can focus on the human part. You know, we all have those human emotions. And I think sometimes coaches pretend they're not there. But training coaches on how to not panic during a stressful game, training coaches how to be a good role model for their athletes so that the athlete doesn't panic. You know, if the coach doesn't get it, then the athletes aren't going to get it either. But if players get it and coaches get it, you know, how to integrate those emotions and being able to work through their emotions, saying, okay, here we are at the big game or here we are at the big race, you know, instead of freaking out, being able to do the deep breathing and do the, you know, the mental imagery and, you know, play the MP3 files that you as coaches have made for them and, you know, use, go back to fundamentals, then I think that we're going to have a lot healthier players be able to, you know, balance that, the ups and the downs, and balance the wins and the losses. So those are some things that I wanted to share. I just wanted to share one other thing, that an opportunity that I had a few months ago was a professional football team, where this is a different team, where they actually had the loss of a player. One of their main players was found dead in his hotel room one morning, and I was called in to do grief counseling for the whole team. So they're a very close professional football team and very close to each other, and they were just totally devastated. And they called off practice, and they called me and asked me to come in and talk with them and do this grief counseling. I'd never done that for a big professional football team before, and but I just went in, and I mean, they were actually, here's these big, huge guys, 300-pound guys that are, you know, normally we see as really aggressive out on the field, and they were just sobbing and crying in this, we met in a hotel room, and they were just so upset because this one player really meant a lot to them, and they were very close. And so I came in, and I just said, you know, I'm not here to talk to you, I'm here to talk with you about and help you process through what's just happened and try to make sense of all this and try to, you know, work through your emotions. And so I just went around the room, and I just talked with each one of them, or just asked each one that was willing to talk, you know, what did this player mean to you, and what, you know, what are you feeling right now, what do you need right now, and where are you, what do you need to do to, you know, what's the best thing that we can help you with to be able to handle your emotions. And they were just really open, and it was just amazing how much these football players that normally don't share their emotions at all, how much they were able to share. So I was really, it was one of the most satisfying things I'd ever done. It was kind of scary to go in there in front of all these football players when I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but to ask them to share their feelings, and they were so, at that moment, they were more open, you know, than I'd ever seen a group of players before, and they just came up and hugged me afterward and said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you were here to, you know, Dr. Joanne, to help us through this process. And they said, yeah, it felt like a big weight had just been lifted off. And they were just able to then feel like it was okay to talk about it, and that made such a huge difference to them with that situation. And that's the kind of thing that you could do with, and I was, you know, because it's a professional football team, they had a budget, and they were able to, I said, name your price, and so I just said what price I, you know, wanted for that, and they said, okay, we'll write you a check right away, and there was no question about it. So I was paid well right on the spot, and was able to do a really good service for them and do something that was the most gratifying thing I'd ever done. And so that's a situation, the kind of thing where you can make yourself available to teams and as well as individuals, and you know, do that kind of grief counseling and or a support work when there's something traumatic that goes on, or a crisis kind of thing. And a lot of times you don't have to say too much, as far as you know, you don't have to give a lecture. It's just a matter of being there and asking questions, you know, asking people how they're feeling and just being with them, being right there for them when they need you. So I just wanted to bring that out, that's another really valuable service that you could offer as a performing edge coach. You know, it could be something simple like an athlete just got injured out on, you know, when he's out on the, like Brian, out on the golf course, or you know, TJ with an athlete that gets injured and, you know, running 50 kilometers, or you know, Pam with your soccer players somebody that gets injured, or Jeff with motocross. Injuries happen all the time there. And so I just, you know, it's something that's really that we can provide so much value for. And Jeff Levout wrote in, you know, who's in New York. He's on the call here, but I think he said he couldn't, you know, talk because he's in a conference. He's at work right now in a meeting. But he did a lot of he answered a lot of the questions and taught, you know, gave a lot of useful comments here. He was saying that, you know, I have some strong personal opinions relative to what I feel are very inflated salaries in most professional sports, oftentimes leading to poor behavior, judgment, and poor decision-making. And then he talked about, you know, what kinds of pressures athletes are under, that, you know, pressures to win at all costs. There's negative peer influences. There's poor coaching and fan sponsor expectations. And then there's the internal part. And he was saying that I used to place more pressure on myself than anyone else, you know, when Jeff was a professional motocross racer. And then in terms of what could cause an athlete to break under pressure, Jeff mentioned that the lack of ability to perform overnight or prolonged injury can prevent full recovery or previous performance levels. You know, you're thinking, I'm not as good as I used to be, kind of thing. That can really cause a difficult time for an athlete. And then there's forced or premature retirement from the sport, you know, where the athlete says, I know nothing else. This is what I do. This is my life. This is my identity as an athlete. I know an athlete right now that's a runner and a hiker. She just got a diagnosis of her, you know, that she's got the osteoarthritis in her knee and told by the doctor that she shouldn't be walking or running anymore. And that's all she does is hike and go to these beautiful places like Peru and, you know, like TJ and all these places and has a difficult time. And so, yeah, all of a sudden they're told that they can't do sport anymore. That's a really tough one. But that's something that you can, as a performing as coach, can really help with and really help someone to make that transition into maybe they could swim instead of they can still do something, a different kind of sport, if they can't do the sport of their choice. And then how to handle athlete trauma from an injury or major sports loss or, you know, PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome from witnessing a life event. Jeff mentioned, you know, planning ahead for the inevitable injuries, if not when employ, you know, use those imagery visualization techniques like we've been talking about here in this program and not dwell on the potential scenarios, but, you know, just prepare for life after your sport and talking about it, seeking counseling, you know, seeking help from people like us is huge. So so those are some of the kinds of things that Jeff was talking about. Oh, one other thing you mentioned, what can coaches do to facilitate healing emotionally, mentally, and physically? He mentioned, as Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys, commented, football is only part of life. Sport, supporting family, friends, teammates during such times is life and most important, showing understanding and compassion and, you know, providing professional services and, you know, maintaining the active athlete involvement, even if you're injured, you know, just do what you can and provide that positive coaching and athlete relationships. So, I wanted to open it up to you guys to comment about what you think about all this, what kinds of pressures athletes are under and what kind of questions you might have for, you know, how to deal with athletes and what you think about the you know, what's happening in sports with the pressure. You guys have comments and questions? Feel free to jump in.
I think one of the, this is Pam.
Hi, Pam. Yeah, if you could speak up a little bit, that'd be great.
Okay. One of the most important things for us as coaches and me coming from a mental health background is to know when we feel like we're in over our head working with somebody and to refer the person for more intense work with somebody. For example, if the sponsor really was major depression, you know, that would be something that needs medication and or more therapy than a performance coach would be, you know, should be offering, et cetera. So I think it's important in these situations for us to understand our limitations in helping, but also to be able to say, I think you need more than I can provide, and this is where I recommend you go to get some more help. And letting the coaches know, you know, if we're working with people too, is letting the coaches know these are red flags that you should be looking for, and these are the flags that you need to say, okay, we need to get you more help. And sometimes those are visible and sometimes those are not visible, but to be aware of them so that you can see them.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great point, Pam. That we need to let coaches know when they you see red flags or suspect something might be going on, and to know what you can do and when you're over your head with a case. That's a really good point that I wanted to bring up too. If you find that someone's talking about, suicidal or talking about, thinking about taking their lives, saying things like, I don't know why I'm here in this world anymore, or I don't know why I should be here. Those are kinds of things that if you're a licensed clinical psychologist, then you can handle that. If you're not, then it's good to refer to someone who's a licensed psychologist or licensed marriage, family, child counselor to work with that part of it, and then but you can still continue to work with them with the mental part. Dealing with their the visualization and the positive attitude and how to set goals and how to keep moving forward, that kind of thing. So it could be a combination, that you could continue to work with them on the aspects of their performance. And then refer to someone else for the deeper mental disorder issue, because as you say, they might need medication. And but oftentimes, with professional athletes, they may be drinking, drugs or alcohol, and then if they're referred for medication, say depression, and if they're continuing to drink, then there's a major problem. Combining, because most of those drugs are prescription drugs, should not be taken with alcohol. So oftentimes they may need a substance abuse program to refer them there. So it's good for you to find, those kinds of resources in your area in case you need to refer someone to those kinds of places as well. So really good point, Pam. Thanks for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, other people have comments or questions or cases you're working with?
Yeah, this is TJ, and I thought it was really interesting what you said about how we can offer a totally different perspective than the coach does, because they're interested in the game, they're interested in the bottom line, they're interested in who wins and loses. And a lot of what I run up against when I talk to people about performing edge coaching is they say, well, my coach talks about that mental training stuff and we do it in our practices, and so I don't really need another coach to help me with that. But the way that you described it today, it's clear that I can offer like a totally different perspective, because I'm not interested in the bottom line. I'm interested in what happens to the athlete, and his or her mind and body, as opposed to the winning, So I think it's just a really key thing for me to sort of hear that again and realize that, and to use that when I'm talking to people about the work that we do and how it actually is completely different than what the head coach is going to give you, you know?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And in terms of selling that to the coach, if you need to work with it, I think it does, you know, oftentimes just working with the individual and their whole mind and their perspective on things, TJ, like you say, creating, coming from a different perspective, it creates a happier, healthier person overall. And most of the time that does then come back to what the coach's goal and help them with their bottom line with winning and all too. So, but it's like, you need to, I think each person, there's so much going on inside each person's mind and body, and what we see out on the field is only the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more that we can work on with these athletes. And so, yeah, it's great, TJ, that you brought that up. Yeah, especially because you're working with the massage therapist, you can work on the body and the mind together, right?
Yeah, I could. And just, you know, that we're not emotionally attached to whether, you know, that football team goes to the Super Bowl or whatever. You know, I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in the health of my clients. So I think we can really use that to encourage people to do this kind of work on top of whatever mental coaching their coaches happen to be giving them already.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because oftentimes if they're doing something in a group setting or with as part of a team, oftentimes I find athletes, if it's an internal person there, the athletes don't feel that they can really talk about their own personal situation because they feel too close to, you know, that might get out to the coaches or get out, that information is not confidential and might, get used against them or somehow hurt them in some way if they talk too much about their own personal situations, you know, if it's in a group situation there or with a, you know, someone that's hired by the organization. But if they talk with you, you know, outside of that, they can feel like it's totally confidential and feel safe and feel like you're somebody that they can really confide in and open up to. Like I remember Stacey Dragila when she came to me about talking about the you know, to help her with her pole vaulting and all the pressure she was going through going to the Olympics. She said, yeah, I feel like you're, you know, somebody outside of that, you know, outside of my coaches and outside of the whole competitive environment I can talk to and trust and, you know, that you're not involved in all this, the day-to-day coaching stuff. You know, you're more, feel like I can say anything and kind of get stuff out. Well, that's the kind of thing that you can do, yeah, too, all of you as coaches. So, great, yeah, that's super. Yeah, other people, you have comments or questions?
Dr. Joanne, it's Amy.
Oh, hi, Amy.
I have a question for you. How would you handle, like, when I go back and work with the dancers at the ballet, just very briefly, we touched upon the issue of injuries for them, and they were all saying, yeah, this is a big one, because 3/4 of the time they're dancing, they are injured in some way. So how do you suggest broaching the topic with a group of them? Like, what would you do with that?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Can you hear my voice okay? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
My volume's all right here. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one with ballet. Because
they're so, you know, they perform in a group a lot of the time, and there are multiple injuries. Many of them are injured when they're dancing. They're still dancing, but they most of them do have some type of injury with their foot.
Yeah, they're asking their bodies to do this, these amazing things, being on their toes the whole time, which is it was tough for anybody to do. So it's you know, you're working with them in a group, talking with them and doing a workshop.
Well, it could be in a group or it could be in small. We haven't figured out exactly how it's going to be, but the bottom line is there's so many of them that are injured that have to dance together as a group.
Yeah. It's yeah. Ideally, you know, they want to. You know, the best way to get over an injury, of course, is to get rehab and go to somebody like TJ. Send them out to TJ in Oregon, right? with massage therapy, or you know, get the right kind of diagnosis and treatment, and you know, stay off the injury so they can heal. But that I guess it depends on how bad the injury is and whether it's something that they're managing. It's a tough one. Are they able to you know, get treatment, diagnosis and treatment for the injuries?
Well, they do have a physical therapist that's there, but she's only there part-time. She's only there, I think, a couple days a week with them. But as far as the mental part, that's what I'm thinking, aside from just the physical part.
Yeah.
Is there any certain approach that you would take with them as far as is handling that issue that seems to be kind of a chronic issue with dancers?
Yeah. I'd say to, you know, do everything they can to, you know, warm up properly to, you know, first, because warmer muscles are, you know, less likely to get injured or to be aggravated, and to be able to kind of listen to your body, to know what to do. You know, that chapter, there's a chapter in my book, section 5 of the book called Listening to the Wisdom of Your Body. So that would be good to listen to, you know, read that part and do some of the exercises in that part. You could have them, you know, sit in a, it would be in a group and kind of go through and check in with their bodies ahead of time and just see what areas are sore and which parts are feeling okay, and just to be able to try to have a strategy to sometimes you can decide to alter your workout just based on how you're feeling. You know, they may be able to do, I don't know how much leeway they have in how much dancing they can do. If they're, you know, really hurting, you know, might be able to choose, you know, based on how they're feeling, and to be able to say, you know, to not do as much of the workout that day, you know, be able to kind of decide how much they're going to do. There's, I think, you know, just be, yeah, because doing a kind of a exercise with them, like becoming quiet and listening. You know, often what doesn't occur, you know, we're usually telling ourselves to just, you know, you could give a talk to them on that whole area, you know, kind of based on that that chapter in the book on listening to the wisdom of the body, and that as athletes we tend to be, you know, really action-oriented and driven and goal-oriented, and we're accustomed to sort of actively telling our bodies what to do most of the time and saying, you know, pick up the pace or pick up your leg and, you know, why are you so stiff? You know, kind of saying those things to ourselves. The typical reaction is to try to override it, whatever our body is telling us, and saying, oh, God, that stupid knee, why is it freezing up right now? God, but what doesn't often occur to athletes is to become quiet and listen to our sensations and, you know, even if you are running, even if you're dancing, you know, let your body give you, you could, you know, kind of talk to them about how they can, you know, let your body give you that crucial feedback that you need, like, well, how's my body feeling today? What does it need? And then, you know, take in and respect your body's wisdom and before you decide on your course of action for that day. So when you, you know, and I think when you let your body speak to you first, as opposed to just telling your body what to do, you know, actually letting your, you know, kind of, you could do a visualization with them where you have everyone, you know, real quiet and closing their eyes and letting their body, asking their body, okay, how are you feeling? What particular parts of the body need special attention? And I think when you let your body speak to you, you're allowing yourself to be open to the depth and, you know, richness of your whole self. And once you pay attention to those sensations in your body, sometimes they're more likely to release and let, you know, then you can, sometimes if it's just, it depends on what kind of pain it is. And, you know, if you, if it is something that's really injury, you know, that's, I think it depends on whether it's sort of good pain or bad pain, too. If it's something that's continually getting worse, where it's something that's really doing damage to their body, I think that it's better to, you know, have them go to the physical therapist or massage therapist, get something, get it diagnosed and get it worked on properly and maybe lay off for a little bit of time. But if it's something that's, you know, a small ache or pain that you can work through, then that's the type of thing that, you know, if you pay attention to the sensation or whatever area it is, sometimes it can, you know, it's a tightness maybe in a muscle, then it may be more likely to release and you can go on with relaxing and being able to dance, you know, to dance in a more relaxed way. I think relaxation is a big part. When we have pain, a lot of times we tense up against the pain. And so mentally, if you can kind of mentally relax and be able to warm up the body more, you know, at the beginning and then just be able to relax through it, then oftentimes awareness alone can take care of some of the problems, not all of them maybe, but also, you know, in terms of mentally, you know, just checking in with your body, if you can, you know, gain a better sense of what you need to do. You could tell them to alter, see if maybe sometimes altering your posture, altering your form, or altering your breathing, just, you know, changing the way you breathe. Usually when we're in pain, or then things tighten up, and then our breathing, you know, kind of gets short, shallow breaths, and so everything tightens up more, and it kind of leads to a spiral. Whereas if you start with the breathing and breathe real slowly and deeply and centering and focus on the breathing out, you know, the exhale, oftentimes you can release some of that muscle tension with each breath out. And just imagine as they're breathing out, as they're breathing out the tension and breathing out any pain, it's better, you know, acknowledge that word, but better not to use the word pain too much because the right brain takes that in, but call it a sensation, and just allow them to, you know, just be able to breathe through it and relax the muscles so that they can, you know, perform better. And then I think, you know, this, like, there's an awareness exercise you can do, and I can, right after this, I can take this chapter, the exercises in the chapter, and listening to the wisdom of the body, and turn that into, I'm working on the workbook here, and then do a workbook section on that for you, and put that up in the members area here. And so you could do, like, an awareness exercise, the beauty of, you know, asking yourself, well, what bodily sensations am I aware of, and what parts need my attention? And then once you identify a certain area, then you can ask yourself, well, what exactly does that feel like? And, you know, try to find the words to describe it. And you want to make sure that you find the best words to articulate how it feels. Like, do I have tight shoulders or heavy feet, or is my mind racing? And, And then I asked each person to write down those thoughts in a journal, you know, before they start dancing or afterwards. This applies to any of you, of course, with running and, you know, with golf and with any sports that you're working with soccer. And so rather than fighting with the body, the next thing you want to do is just acknowledge its presence and say, okay, yes, I know you're there, you know, the tight shoulders or the heavy feet or mind racing. And so rather than fighting with your body, as we often do, saying, oh, geez, there's that darn knee pain again or that shoulder pain, you know, this time just ask them to simply notice the sensation with a kind of just a curiosity, and then just begin to learn about it. And they can just notice what happens and be aware of any changes in the sensation. And I've often used this with like athlete clients. Maybe they've had a hamstring pain or foot pain, and after acknowledging the sensation, sometimes they notice you know, immediate sense of relief. You can say, okay, they'll say the sensation is there, but it's no longer painful. It just, now that it has my attention, it doesn't need to kind of hurt and nag at me anymore. And so using that technique of kind of listening and dialoguing, it can become a way to, you know, gain more knowledge about your body. It's really, I think the body has a lot of knowledge there. And when we learn to, you know, hear the whispers of the body and mind before they have to shout at us, try to hear them early on, then you can train the body more consistently and remain healthier through the year. And another thing, I think, well, then you gain that new sensitivity to the body. So I think another thing you can do is right after the workout or right after their ballet, just, you know, have them go right, as opposed to running off to the next activity somewhere. That's a really important time to, you know, do whatever they need to do for rehab. You know, icing is really important. I was going to write a book called Back to the Ice Age. You know, just icing is great for getting, you know, reducing inflammation and all of that. So it's a great tool there as well. Those are some, and then go to the physical therapist if they need to, if they have some facilities there where they can do any kind of physical rehab right after the workouts, then that's great to try to take care of it afterward. But icing is something that every athlete could do themselves. It's readily available. So I would say that's really, you know, some suggestions for you. If they've been on their feet all that time, you know, so just then do the things that they need to do to recover quicker for the next workout, like, you know, staying off their feet and, doing a lot of icing on and off. So, yeah, is that helpful?
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Yeah. So anyone else have some questions or ideas? I don't know, Sue or Brian, you guys have some ideas or questions? I think Sue's on the line, but I think she's mute because she has to muted her phone because she has to go to a session or something. And Brian, I don't know if you're on the line, but I think Brian had a question about sleep. He was saying, what's the best exercise to help an athlete to sleep? And I think if you go to the book, the Your Performing Edge book, with that chapter 5, I've got several relaxation exercises in there, and I'll go ahead and put those on a Word document, and then I'll put that in the members area. I'll send you an email to everyone so that you can have those. And that's a really good topic. We might talk about that next time too, because a lot of athletes have trouble sleeping, I think, before their workouts or before their competitions especially. So, you know, we can talk about how to get better sleep and some of the issues around that too, as well as and just general relaxation. So, great. And our next call will be on December 27th, so it's just a couple days after after Christmas. So I'll be here, we can go ahead and have our call then. And if you have any questions or any suggestions for topics, feel free to email those in. And I don't know, Brian, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay. Yeah, did you have a question or a comment?
No, I thought everything that's been covered is wonderful. I love the holistic approach about, you know, we're not just there to help people understand what performance involves, but that we're there to ensure they can be happy, wholesome, you know, well-balanced individuals. I mean, I agree. Obviously, in team sport, it's all about the result, but I come from an individual sport where the most successful guys, you know, golf that is, are just very well-balanced, humble, thoughtful people, you know, and a lot of them do see sports psychology people. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that's been said so far.
Great, yeah. I know golf is such a mental sport for sure, and it's easy to put a lot of pressure on yourself, much more so than you need, than golfers need sometimes. And if things aren't going well, it's really important to have, yeah, other things in your life to fall back on so you're healthy, yeah. So that's, I think, another really important aspect that we can help our athletes with. So great, yeah. And then, yeah, since you asked about sleep, next time, yeah, we can talk about that as our next topic.
Sure, great.
On our call, that'll be great. So, okay, wonderful. Well, great great discussion with all of you. Yeah, has this been helpful, everyone?
Oh, it has, yeah, wonderful.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, all right. Well, thanks so much, and I'll have this call replay up shortly, and we'll be in touch, and I'll send you some documents by email here. So we'll talk soon. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.